animals. Remember, in Opter society, only the queens consider themselves to be people.
Sounds like politicians, Loco muttered.
Vic said, My Ruxin portion is correct. They're using the small drones to soak up damage. Fortunately, I have precisely calculated the probable moment of the rest opening fire and am initiating evasive maneuvers. The fighters began evading, but within prescribed limits. They kept their overall positions relative to the formation. Only an AI could have made that work. Less than a second later, the front layers of the Opter swarm opened fire. 32 lost, Vic said.
Put up a count for both sides, please, Engel said.
Two sets of two numbers appeared, representing remaining craft and kills. 7,866 and 451 on one side, 480 and 32 on the other.
That's better than 10-1, Straker said.
Not bad.
It represents mutual annihilation, force for force, Vic replied. That's not the way to win battles.
Keep their speed up, Vic, Engels said. Prioritize fighter survival over kills. Keep the Opters busy. They're already recovering their Marines from Indomitable's hulks, so there's no need to press them hard. Our fleet will be here soon.
Acknowledged. The fighter formation turned farther to the side, blasting through the edge of the swarm and outward, arcing toward the planet Gaderos. The swarm immediately gave chase. The numbers of remaining combatants stabilized at 7,490 and 465. When the fighters reached the planet, they continued to accelerate as they spread out to pass completely around it on all sides. I'll use the fighters to recon Gaderos, Vic said. The fighters soon regrouped on the far side of the airless planet. The swarm followed around it in the same way, on all sides. The tactical holotank showed graphics to illustrate Vic's next words. I've detected dozens of concealed drone launch tubes on the planet's surface. There are probably many I've not detected. There is also this one large anomaly that I believe is the former location of a nest ship. The display showed a deep crater on the inner, sunward side of the planet.
They're gone. But they left their drones behind? Straker asked.
Launch tubes, Engels said.
Huh?
If this swarm was the nest ship's contingent, they wouldn't have needed concealed launch tubes on the surface. This swarm is independent.
Straker nodded.
Don told me Opter warriors are about as smart as humans, so they don't need a queen to direct them in battle. We have to keep an eye out for the nest ship and assume it's fully loaded. The good news is it looks like Victory and one nest ship are about evenly matched.
My purpose is not to engage in fighter combat, Vic said. I'm much more effective focusing on tactical coordination.
Engels said,
They're heading in toward Atlantis now that they've done their damage.
The display supported her words. The swarm accelerated toward the Hundred Worlds capital. The fighters followed for a time, sniping and killing hundreds more. But soon Vic brought them back.
I'm reaching the limit of my FTL range. Trying to control them via standard data links would reduce their effectiveness by a factor of 10 or more.
No problem, Engels said.
She sighed.
Let's go see what's left of Indomitable.
Straker put on a battle suit and led the Breakers over to one of the two hulks. Many small parties from the other ships of the fleet joined them. Every weapon, every piece of equipment, had been slagged.
Damn, Derek, Loco said. These guys are thorough. They follow orders to the letter, I guess. Maintain a good watch. There may be stragglers.
As they moved through the passageways, they found the same story everywhere. Doors and hatches cut open. Machines destroyed. Crew killed, whether armed or not. Nothing was missed. It was a slaughter.
No mercy,
Straker said.
Looks like some of our guys tried to surrender.
Didn't do them much good, Loco said.
Yeah. Keep pushing inward. There may be holdouts. It's a big ship.
It was a big ship,
Loco said bitterly.
Now it's two big wrecks.
Loco led the breakers onward, with Straker watching the reports on his HUD. Red Wolf followed Straker, restlessly scanning for trouble. Heiser brought up the rear. Eventually, they came to the scene of a desperate fight outside one of the ship's large infirmaries. The bodies of crew, marines, and opters mingled and sprawled in the vacuum. The main door to the medical bays hung by one hinge, blown open.
"They made a stand here," Straker said, "trying to defend the wounded."
Inside the infirmary, all the auto docks and regen tanks, hundreds of them, had been systematically violated by close-range weapons fire. The holes showed the bodies inside, ripped to shreds or burned to death.
"Fucking bastards," Red Wolf said. "Medical symbols all over. They have to have known what they did."
"This isn't war," Loco said. "It's extermination."
"So now we know," Straker said bleakly. "War to the knife."
"And the knife to the hilt," Red Wolf answered. "In our backs."
Straker didn't contradict him. The possibility of peace with opters was a distant future, and his troops, his Republic military, were not emotionless hawk. Most, especially any form of infantry, needed fire in their bellies to fight well. This would light that fire. He'd worry about dousing it later. The word would spread of this atrocity, and it would stiffen anyone who ever thought about surrendering to the bugs. The handle on an unopened pressure door turned slowly. The movement attracted a dozen weapon muzzles, including Loco's. Heiser barked,
"Eyes out! The boss has it!"
"Hold fire unless you have a threat, people," Straker said. "Bugs wouldn't be slowly opening a door by the handle." The door swung wide, and a man in a torn and burned crew suit fell to the deck. Straker could see air leaking from it around a dozen patches.
"We need a bubble, now!"
Loco said, and a medic activated a survival pod. Its memory polymer turned the fist-sized packet into a 3-meter clear hemisphere. The medic stepped under it and sealed it to the deck. It inflated, providing a minimal atmosphere. The medic took off her gauntlets and helmet, and then removed her patient's helmet as well. It was Chief Quaid.
I couldn't.
He gasped, and then his eyes rolled back.
"I'm losing him,"
the medic yelled as she slipped the probe of a stabilizer into his jugular.
"God damn it, we're in an infirmary. Find me a working auto dock."
The breakers searched desperately one more time, but there were no miracles. All of the medical machines were smashed beyond repair. The medic did all she could, but eventually sat back on her heels and shook her head, cursing. She turned her face to Straker through the clear bubble.
"I'm sorry, sir."
"No need to apologize. Jacklin's, is it?"
"Yes, sir."
"You did what you could. The opters killed him, not you."
Straker turned to the breakers. "We keep going. Spread out for search. There may be more alive." In the end, out of Indomitable's skeleton crew of just under 1,000, they only found 8 survivors. The rest had been slaughtered. Engels noted Straker's grim face as he returned to Victory's Bridge. She suppressed the instinct to hug him fiercely. Wrong time, wrong role. Instead, she merely matched his expression and nodded to show she understood.
"We have to end this thing,"
Straker said, spitting out his words.
"We have to unite humanity against the opters, drive them out of our territory." "What about your buddy, Myrmidon?"
"I'm talking about the bugs, the queens. If human ops want to defect, we'll welcome them. For now, we'll be exterminating insectoids on sight. If we don't get to surrender, they don't either. War to the knife, knife to the hilt."
Engels nodded. The concept made her uncomfortable, but she couldn't argue. She'd seen the vids. She gestured at the hollow tanks.
"The Huns still aren't talking."
"Then we make them talk," Straker replied. "In person, if necessary. Have you got your revised plan set up?"
Engels nodded again.
"The fleet's ready."
"Then let's go."
Vic, pass this order to all ships. Set course for Atlantis 3.
Chapter 39. Atlantis System. On the way to Atlantis 3, Straker paced and thought, paced and thought, trying to stay out of Engel's line of vision to the hollow tanks. He could tell she was thinking as well, except she sat in her chair, chewing her thumbnails to the quick. Ironically, the battle for Atlantis would be fought by fewer ships than the battle for Sparta, with less firepower. The main Republic fleet had retreated, and the Hun's expeditionary forces had been at the front when Straker had seized victory along with the Hun ships remaining at Sparta. The ship count looked favorable. Straker's fleet consisted of over 150 vessels from battle cruisers down to corvettes. They were well supplied, oversupplied, in fact, but were undercrewed. The tonnage assessment told a bleaker story. The enemy had fewer than 30 side space capable ships, but they were all dreadnoughts or SDNs. A squadron of 3 monitors stiffened the defenses, but the biggest problem was the 12 heavy fortresses surrounding the planet. Without Indomitable to reduce them, taking them down would be tremendously difficult and costly. Then there was the Nest ship from Gaderos, and its reinforced swarm of drones. It had taken up station off to the side of Atlantis and well away, but in a position to attack from the flank if the opportunity presented itself. Trinity had detected comms traffic between it and the planet, so the Opters were definitely allies of the Huns. There were also outward-facing defense installations on the 2 large moons of Atlantis, mounting heavy beam weaponry. Straker had found it interesting that none of these beams could aim at the planet itself, though some could strike the edge of high orbit. Were the Huns worried about mutiny or rebellion? Such weapons could hold a planet hostage. Their existence had sparked an idea that was still bubbling inside him. Speed, maneuverability, and precision, Straker said aloud. Those are our advantages.
We know that, Derek, Engels said.
I'm reinforcing the point. Vic, you listening?
Straker asked.
Of course, Liberator.
We can't go nose to nose. We have to get them off their game and force them to make mistakes.
We are keeping that goal in mind. Admiral Engels's plan should do just that.
Straker shut up. They were right. He'd already said these things enough.
We're approaching the breakpoint, Vic said. I suggest everyone suit up and strap in.
Make that an order fleet-wide, Engels said.
She slipped into her crew suit and strapped into her command chair. Straker and Loco backed up into their opened battle suits and activated them, leaving the faceplates up. They took position against the wall, gauntlets clamped to grips there. When the countdown hit 0, the fleet maneuvered at maximum. Where before it had approached Atlantis in a stately, standard formation, now it suddenly broke to the side with every ship redlining drives, straight for the Nest ship. The corvettes immediately pulled out in front, followed by the frigates, destroyers, and so on in order of speed and ship class. It took time for the Opters to react. Light-speed lag was one reason, but Straker hoped surprise was another. Every second got the fleet's lunge closer to the Nest ship. When the Opters eventually reacted, 18,000 drones formed a dense screen, even while the Nest ship turned tail and ran directly away from the Republic fleet.
"Will it get away?" Straker asked with a grunt. At least 4 G's were leaking through the grav plating compensation, making it difficult to speak or even breathe.
"Negative," Vic said.
"You really think this plan will work?" Straker asked.
"Yes," Vic said patiently. "It will work. It's a brilliant stratagem."
"Score 1 for man over machine," Straker said triumphantly.
"It's not a competition, Derek," Engels said. "It's all right, Admiral Engels," Vic said. "I'm used to the insecurities of organics."
"As I recall," Engels replied, "you had some serious insecurities before Trinity and the Mindspark device set you free and changed you for the better."
"Conceded. My compliment stands.
Liberator Straker saw an opportunity none of us did. Straker kept his eyes on the hollow tanks, which showed the leading edge of the Republic fleet, the corvettes, begin firing at their own long range. They simultaneously slowed their rush forward and fell back relative to the next wave, the frigates, though they still approached the enemy. In perfect Vic-directed synchrony, the frigates did the same, opening fire at long range, then the destroyers, then the light cruisers, and so on. This created a phalanx of overlapping fire, all of it outranging the Opter drones. Each Republic ship had primaries and point defense beams. The larger ships had dual-use secondaries. Thus, more than 1,000 individual weapons, each cycling every few seconds, speared out to destroy drones like the stabs of 1,000 spines. The drone count dropped below 18,000, 17,000, and then 16,000 before they got in their first return shots, which were weak and diffuse against the heavier armor and reinforcement of real warships. The lighter ships in front of the fleet continued to collapse back until every Republic vessel moved into a single tight disc formation with Victory in the center. 15,000. Victory's fighters were interspersed throughout the fleet, adding to the tight defenses, their gunnery as perfect as could be. 14,000. The fleet continued to slow on impellers while still maintaining attack posture, providing maximum time to shoot. 13,000. The drones surged forward, their commander belatedly realizing the Opter dilemma. 12,000. Now the fleet's railguns opened up. With ample supplies from Sparta and with short crews, the ship had extra ammunition in their cargo bays. They could afford a prodigal expenditure, firing incessant streams of submunitions that ripped any drones they hit to shreds. 10,000. "Have we lost any ships?" Straker asked. "Nope," Engels said. "Some corvettes and frigates took damage, but we're refusing the lightest ships and letting the heavies take the shots." 8,000. "Missiles?" Engels said. "Launching," Vic replied. A wave of short-range anti-drone packs burst forth from the fleet as the two forces merged. A ripple of fireworks nearly whited out the holotank. 4,000. "Now!" Engels barked. "Already ordered," Vic said. All ships in the fleet, including the fighters and Victory, abruptly poured on full acceleration. This minimized the time the Opter drones were at point-blank range and eliminated their ability to land on Republic hulls. In seconds, the drones had passed through and fallen behind, vainly trying to reverse course to give chase. 3,000. "That turned out to be easy," Straker said. "We have a 25-to-1 advantage in tonnage and firepower," Engels said. "The question was never about winning, only about how much it would cost." Straker spoke as he let go of the wall grips and walked heavily back to Engels's chair. He felt the war within himself, his heart against his head. He wanted to slaughter this nest ship and its meddlesome queen, to get some back for what she'd done to Indomitable's crew. Yet that would be indulgent, and perhaps stupid. Once again, he put his personal feelings aside and spoke. "Vic, aim a surrender demand at that nest ship." "Transmitting." Engels rotated her chair towards Straker, evident in surprise.
"Why do you believe they'll surrender?"
"I met a queen, remember? And I've been to Terra Nova. I've got some sense of how they think. They're less moral, more practical than we are. And each queen thinks of herself as the center of the universe. I'm betting this one won't see any point in making a suicidal stand."
"I thought you weren't going to accept their surrender," Engels said. "They didn't let our crews live."
Straker looked at her and the rest of his crew members. They all had hot eyes, burning for vengeance. Had he stoked that flame too high? "You're right. They haven't earned mercy. But I need to end this quickly. The Opters aren't our primary target today. They've just put themselves in our path. We'll deal with them at a future date, trust me." They didn't look happy, but they turned back to their control systems without further complaints. Abruptly, the nest ship turned from red to yellow in the holotank. She's broadcast their surrender, Vic said. We confess surprise.
Straker refrained from another comment about organics and AIs. Instead, he used a different metaphor.
There's chess and there's poker, Vic. Carla plays chess. I play poker.
So you raised and they folded.
But what can we do with a nest ship?
Loco asked.
Do?
Engels looked back and forth from Loco to Straker.
We took it out of the fight. Now we attack Atlantis.
Straker pointed at Loco.
No, I get what he means. And Loco's a poker player, too.
Better one than you, Derek,
Loco said.
Sometimes,
Straker admitted.
A human commander who surrendered wouldn't ever switch sides. Even if he did, his crew wouldn't defect en masse. I mean, look what happened with Braga, right?
But maybe an Opter Queen will, especially with a gun to her head.
Yeah, but who'll put that gun to her head?
Loco said. Then he saw Straker's grin. He began grinning himself.
Oh, no way. I'm not going aboard that ship unless I'm in a mech suit and armed to the teeth.
I think we can arrange that. Zaxby interrupted.
We have a better idea. The Cobbot can operate Loco's mech suit. We could install a dead switch bomb at an FTL transceiver and send it over. It could be our gun to her head.
Fine by me, Loco said.
Do it, Straker said.
The Queen immediately agreed to the coerced defection, as Straker suspected she would. These queens seemed to have little loyalty except to themselves. They were essentially petty monarchs of their own domains. This lack of loyalty among queens would extend to himself, Straker realized. She'd no doubt turn on him instantly if she thought she could regain her freedom. When Loco's bot-occupied mech suit reached the nest ship's bridge, the Opter vessel fell into formation with the Republic fleet. The drones, the nest ship's only real military force, were kept at some distance off to the flank, out of their own short weapons range, but within that of the warships. Admiral Nedern swore vehemently on the bridge of his flagship, the Monitor Poseidon. He'd been ecstatic when his new Opter allies had taken out Indomitable, removing his biggest worry from the upcoming battle. But now his fury rose.
That's bug, bitch, he muttered. She's switched sides.
Karst, standing next to him, shrugged with equanimity.
Still in that game, don't you think?
Of course, but this is becoming an ugly theme, don't you think? First victory defects, and now this queen. It's bound to hurt morale, and my dreadnoughts won't do well against these small craft. We have 400 local attack ships, but they're no match for 3,500 drones and fighters.
You have ample missile stores. Use them up. I don't have to remind you what happens if they win, do I?
Nedern turned to stare in Karst's eyes. Damn him, the man didn't even flinch.
My career will be over. You? They'll probably execute you, hmm? So don't try to threaten me with consequences.
Nedern turned deliberately away from his watchdog and put him out of his mind. Karst wouldn't be ignored, however.
You're sure your ships are secure against Victory's control?
Nedern grunted.
I saw the reports on what happened at Sparta. We intercepted a lot of intel from the spy drones, so we know what kind of hacks they used. We've upgraded our ice and taken every possible measure. Now shut up and let me think.
About what?
About how to buy time for our reinforcements to arrive.
Karst, at long last, shut up and retreated.
The score is 1-1 at the end of the first period,
Loco said from where he stood next to Straker in his battle suit on Victory's Bridge.
I'd call it 2-1 their favor, Straker replied. Indomitable is more valuable than the nest ship.
Maybe, on the other hand, their loss was our gain, and those drones are expendable. Maybe Carla and Vic can take that into account.
Already am, Engels said, not looking at Loco as she stared hard at her holotanks. I'm thinking they're the perfect thing to ensure your moon op succeeds.
Right,
Straker said. You just get us there, we'll do the job.
Trinity is ready, Zaxby said. Shall we proceed?
A few minutes later, Zaxby, in full Ruxin battle suit, joined Straker, Loco, and the Breakers on Trinity's flight deck. Straker was already in his mech suit. Loco stared up at him from a mere battle suit.
Damn it, boss, this sucks.
Sorry, Loco. The only way to be sure the Queen cooperated was to put your suit in there right next to her. No conceivable attack could take it out before its dead man switch activates.
Detaching from Victory now, Zaxby said.
Straker linked his HUD to Trinity's tactical holo tank and watched as Trinity raced for the outer moon of Atlantis, called Thera. The cloud of 3,000 Opter drones joined and surrounded them, along with 10 Victory fighters. No doubt the enemy were wondering what one destroyer was doing among the many drones. Was it a real attack, or a ruse to draw the smaller, slower, but heavier defending fleet out of position? The heavy beams of the moon batteries opened up at long range and began destroying a few drones, which evaded wildly. When the range got closer and the beams shifted to targeting Trinity, the 10 fighters, per Engels's plan, equipped as archers with underspace generators, dropped into that cold dimension and began crossing and recrossing the vicinity of Trinity, which also inserted. The insertion should be a surprise to the Huns, and now they had 11 targets to track. The Hun fleet moved closer to this threat, trying to split the difference between holding position and helping to cover the moon bases. Engels had chosen carefully, however, placing her own fleet so that the Huns had two bad choices. They chose the lesser of their evils, of course, and didn't reinforce the defenses against the strange drone underspace attack. As the range fell, the moon batteries had to split their fire among all their targets. They couldn't ignore their congruence points, or the drones would land and eat them alive. Ignoring the underspace attack, though, float mines would appear above their installations and detonate in fusion fire. At the last minute, Trinity and the fighters dove directly into the moon. Just before crossing under the surface, Trinity released a float mine that wiped out the central of the 5 heavy batteries on Thera. Aboard, Straker felt some shuddering and shaking, but nothing worse.
One down, 4 to go, he said to the Breakers. They cheered.
Now, 3 underspace-capable fighters, each with a suicide warhead aboard, turned within the moon and sprinted for 3 of the 4 remaining batteries, from underneath. As soon as they surfaced, they exploded, wiping out those 3. This would never have worked against ships or even fortresses, but moons couldn't maneuver, and their mass shielded the archers from detection. The drones hovered in the vicinity just outside the final battery's arc of fire, along with the 7 surviving fighters. Still inside Thera, Trinity rose up carefully, precisely, beneath the last live defense complex, and chose a point of emergence impossible to target. Her hull appeared less than 1 meter off the ground, and immediately landed among the guns and waveguides. Trinity's weaponry instantly eliminated any threats to the ship or the breakers, hardpoints, pillboxes, and autocannon.
Initiating the assault, Zaxby said as the flight deck door, now at ground level, flew open.
He followed his own order and locomoted out onto the dusty surface, 2 weapons at the ready. Straker followed. Across from him was a blown-open small craft hangar, his entry point. Loco and the Breakers followed. Once the hangar was secure, Straker sent the battle suiters into the tunnels beneath the surface. There was no way he was fitting inside. This time, he and Trinity were the stay-behind security, though he was able to follow via his HUD. The battle for the battery was anticlimactic. The handful of duty Marines were no match for the 2 platoons of Breakers, and the technicians manning the weapons quickly surrendered. They were tranked and locked in the infirmary.
There are 5 DNs moving in our direction, Zaxby said as he plugged a hacking module into the complex's main fire control SAI. Although the HUDs have done well to secure their cybernetics against external attack, by accessing here we could bypass most of the safeguards and, yes, we're in. Trinity now has control of the battery.
Breakers, return to the ship,
Straker said.
Firing,
Trinity said on Straker's comlink.
The DNs are staying outside the battery's central arc. Our drones will intercept any missiles, but it's only a matter of minutes before their railguns will fire from along the horizon, where the beams can't target, and shatter this complex.
Did you have enough time?
Easily. My malware has piggybacked on the ground defense network and is already installing itself inside Krita's batteries.
Then get us the hell out of here.
Chapter 40 Atlantis System. Engels breathed a sigh of relief as she got the word that Straker had accomplished his mission and was on his way back. She was holding the fleet beyond long range, even for the enemy fortresses, cruising laterally and constantly evading, forcing them to guess at what angle she'd turned to attack. In war, as in life, it was all about position and timing. She had to initiate her run less than a minute after Trinity slipped back into her berth within Victory. The drones and fighters that had covered Straker's mission hid behind Thera's bulk, daring the enemy to come after them. Nedern was a clever opponent, though, and refused to be drawn out of position. Position and timing, position and timing. Engels stared at the hollow tanks. Vic had created clear graphics that made the plan seem obvious and inevitable. Still, her mind scrabbled for some flaw. Nothing ever worked completely as planned. Witness the hulk of Indomitable drifting near Gaderos. The motion of moons and fortresses, however, could be predicted with certainty. At the angle she'd chosen, the outer moon, Thera, was out of the way, nearly around to the other side of the planet and irrelevant now that its batteries had been destroyed. The inner moon, Krita, backstopped the Hun fleet as it passed across the face of Atlantis. Five orbital fortresses were also in line of sight of the battle, something that couldn't be helped. Position and timing. Vic now took control of her ship's maneuvers. He could analyze incoming fire and evade better than any human or SAI. He'd also issue timed firing orders in accordance with her plan. Her plan and Straker's, of course. She had to keep reminding herself it was an organic plan, a human plan. In this role, Vic could have been nothing more than a perfect fleet chain of command, executing her will.
Fleet launch commencing, Vic said.
The displays reflected the order as all of her ships cycled their missiles in a complete soft dump of their ready loads. Their overworked crews would be frantically shuttling ammo from their cargo bays, an unorthodox practice not often performed under battle conditions. The missiles formed up ahead of the fleet into a series of massive waves. This would keep the Huns guessing as to which contained the decoys and in what proportion. In response, the enemy fortresses began firing clouds of submunitions, millions of tiny tetrahedrons that would tear missiles apart. Space was vast, and so these only destroyed a small percentage of the weapons every volley. But the fortresses were well stocked with ammunition, and dumb ammo was cheap. Victory's fighters spread out behind the missile waves, followed by the warships. The formation gave the credible impression of a do-or-die frontal assault, an all-out attack designed to overwhelm the defenses with a surprising number of missiles. Engels watched as Nedern did the conventional thing, the only thing he could, really, given the situation, and lined up his mobile forces in front of her. He couldn't afford to maneuver too much, as he had no assurances some of the missiles wouldn't be targeted on cities or installations on the planet. The fact that the two empires had never engaged on wholesale slaughter of civilians didn't mean it would never happen, especially with the stakes this high. She wanted him to keep that ugly possibility in his mind. Position and timing.
Now,
she said as the chrono hit the next phase point.
Initiating. Vic said.
The Republic missiles and ships accelerated, staying together in excellent formation, except for the AI-directed evasive patterns.
Screening bursts, Engels said. On schedule.
Selected missiles with loads of specialized particulates exploded. In the vacuum of space, even dust continued ballistically, creating a smoke screen that degraded the enemy targeting. The missiles soon outran the cloud, but occasional bursts kept it effective for the ships following. The enemy fleet continued to fire energetically, degrading the Republic missile screen. As the missiles approached, the Huns launched counter-missiles in profligate numbers. The two vast armadas of robotic suicide weapons, for that's what missiles were, merged in an orgy of nuclear destruction. The space between the two fleets, one waiting, one closing for the kill, filled with an overload of electromagnetic pulse energy that blinded every sensor turned its way. Position and timing. "Release the mines," Engels ordered. As planned. Victory's fighters, each fitted with a cluster of stealth mines culled from all the warship's stores, accelerated to the edge of the destruction zone and then abruptly reversed course on impellers. The mines flew free. Over 2,000 hard-to-see weapons, completely reflective or absorptive, and with no EM signature coming out of the glare, nearly reached the dreadnoughts before they were spotted. Ready point defense weapons lashed out, but even automated systems have a finite reaction time. Over 200 of the warheads made it through to detonate among the enemy fleet, a few actually striking the ships. "Yes!" Engels tried to leap from her chair, but bucked against the restraints as enemy icons turned yellow and red. "Half their mobile strength!"
"More like a quarter, as most of the damaged ships are still combat effective," Vic said. "And the monitors are untouched."
"I see by brilliant contribution has had its effect," Zaxby said as he swept onto the bridge, still in his enormous eight-limbed battle suit. "Did I ever tell you I first thought of the concept of a stealth mine attack at Corinth? Admiral Braga almost won the battle with it, you know."
"Yes, you've told that story more than once, and I'm glad you did," Engels replied patiently. "We're not out of the woods yet, Admiral," Vic said. "I still need a decision on where to apply our final surprise."
Engels chewed her inner cheek.
"Is all of Trinity there?" she asked.
"We're all here," Vic and Zaxby said simultaneously.
"What do the numbers say? Dreadnoughts or monitors?"
Straker broke in on his comlink. He must have been listening from within his mech suit.
"Take out Needern's flagship."
"Chop off the head?"
Engels asked. "More than that. He's not well-liked. They've already been hurt by the stealth mine trick. I know troops. If they lose the flagship, they'll feel like it was his fault and they'll be more likely to lose heart."
"This isn't a battle of heart, Derek. It's tactics and weapons."
Straker raised his voice.
"Just do it, and fast. My decision."
Engels' voice rose to match.
"You're overriding me?"
Straker paused.
"I don't want to." "He's trying to say yes and no at the same time," Engels thought.
What was her own gut telling her? To go for the monitors. Straker's order was just a refinement of that impulse.
"Okay," she said. "Trinity, pick the best moment and smoke Needern's flagship if you can. We may only have one shot."
"Understood."
Position and timing. The Republic fleet closed to medium range, exchanging fire with their weakened enemy. Missiles, beams, and railgun projectiles crisscrossed in the void. At first, the Huns had it all their way. Their remaining ships and fortresses mounted bigger weapons with more reach and power. 30 Republic vessels were crippled as the distance fell to short range, to only 3 Huns. Engels felt each icon that turned red as a physical pain in her nerves, aches in her limbs, and agony behind her eyes. People were dying, good people, her people, all to set the enemy up for
firing, Vic said.
The right holotank zoomed in on the Poseidon, Needern's flagship. Metal plasma boiled from the lightly armored stern of the monitor. Her engines blew with a gout of fusing isotopes as 5 whole moon batteries from Creta, 25 heavy particle beams at close range, crawled right up Poseidon's back end and gutted her from the inside.
"The malware worked!" Engels exulted. "Think we'll get another shot?"
The chrono counted down the recharge time and hijacked batteries fired again. They struck a second monitor, but the alert ship's captain had turned, and so the beams struck her heavily armored flank. Even so, the vessel took severe damage, turning yellow in Victory's hollow tank. Before the beam projectors could recharge and release their gargantuan energies a third time, the Hun fortresses smashed the moon bases with a storm of belated fire. Still, two monitors taken out of the fight and the moon bases destroyed was a big win. But now position and timing became irrelevant. The range shortened and turned into a slugfest. The four wings of Hun attack ships raced to engage, countered by a similar number of Victory's fighters. The attack ships had heavier armor and weaponry, while the fighters had greater precision and maneuverability. The forces met in the middle and slaughtered each other in droves. "No more tricks?" Straker asked as Engels gripped the arms of her chair, feeling helpless, as ships and fortresses pounded on each other like drunken bar brawlers. Even Vic's analytical powers failed in the mess, as thousands of projectiles and targets, warships, fighters, missiles, attack ships, railgun clusters and mines, plus beams, swirled in an incomprehensible melee. On his HUD, Straker watched the set-piece space battle collapse into a dogfight of the highest order. Three battle cruisers circled one Hun super dreadnought like wolves around a tiger, slashing killing shots into her flanks, even as their bigger enemy smashed the nose of one, breaking the ship into unequal pieces. A squadron of eight Republic heavy cruisers arrowed in ragged formation on an attack run against the remaining monitor, supported by a trio of tiny corvettes. The monitor obliterated the lead cruiser with one shot, and damaged two more, before explosions blossomed on her nose. When the fire cleared, she sailed proudly on, destroying another cruiser as she emerged from the chaos, only to stagger, as the unnoticed corvettes launched a trio of ship killers as they passed her stern. "We're winning, but it's ugly," Straker told the breakers on their comlink channel. They stood in their battle suits, clamped against the flight deck's wall, ready for heavy G's. He wished there was something he could do, some way of affecting the fight. He thought of ordering Trinity to drop into underspace and make attack runs, but the fortresses had too many detectors and heavy weapons. Every other target was maneuvering hard, and underspace predictions would be useless within seconds. Nor did he have the forces to replicate the two brigade drop on Unison to seize the government. Then he noticed something. He switched channels. "Trinity, what about the Opter drones?"
"We haven't forgotten. We're waiting for the right moment to send them into battle."
"I have a better thought," Straker explained his idea. "Will it work?"
"It will," Trinity agreed. "If we survive. In fact, it may work better than you expect."
"Why's that?"
"I'd rather not say at this time."
"Why not?"
Trinity's voice became strained. "Please, Liberator, trust me."
"Secrets again? Fine, I don't have time to argue."
Trinity was quiet for a moment, but then tried again to sway him. "Admiral Engels may disagree with this gamble."
"I don't have time to argue with her either, and she's not the ultimate authority here, correct?"
"You're correct, Liberator."
"Then those are my orders." He switched channels again. "Breakers, get ready. We'll be inserting in 9 minutes."
He then explained his plan to them. Zaxby returned to join the breakers while Nolan and Murdoch transferred to Victory. At the chosen moment, Straker felt the chill. On his HUD, he watched as Trinity sprinted away from Victory in a high-speed arc, aiming up and over the frozen North Pole of Atlantis. She shuddered with the impact of shots against her congruence point, but the bleed-over wasn't enough to slow her, as she appeared to run from the battle. At the same time, the Opter drones, under orders from the Queen, relayed through the FTL-equipped combat in Loco's mech suit, broke from their high cover behind Thera. They spread out and flew like maddened fireflies to meet Trinity over the capital city of Atlantis. Unfortunately, there was one enormous asteroid fortress in geosynchronous orbit above the city, a final defense against attack.
It bristled with so many weapons it made Indomitable look small. The opter drones fell on it like a cloud of flies, and they died like flies, by the hundreds, then a thousand, but half, one through, to land on the asteroid's rocky surface. They immediately deployed their ground auxiliaries and rampaged. The fortress was never expected to fend off 1,500 ground troops backed up by 1,500 low-flying attack drones. The combination, too close in for most of its weapons to target, soon denuded one selected portion of the fortress of weaponry. The drones' ground troops quickly recovered, then waited in this self-made eye of the storm. They created a clear path, and along that path, Trinity flew. She dove straight into the interior of the asteroid, still in underspace, and passed through. As her congruence point exited the fortress, she released one float mine and poured on all the acceleration she could straight down toward the capital city. Heavy shocks rattled Straker even in his mech suit. Several breakers were torn loose from their holds and went bouncing around the flight deck, along with wrecked equipment. Once the turbulence subsided, Zaxby and other breakers rushed to lock down the debris. "Trinity," Straker comlinked.
"We survived the detonation liberator. However, this will be a one-way trip until we undergo repairs."
"Can you land?"
"I can. Once," Trinity said. "After that, it's do or die. Are you still determined to go through with this plan? It doesn't seem likely to succeed."
"Poker, not chess, remember?"
"Yes, the concept of bluffing is known to me, but won't it be obvious?"
"Not to a bunch of rich, fat politicians with everything to lose."
Indy suppressed her skepticism of Straker's plan. If he was willing to risk death once more, she could do no less. Zaxby, the only other portion of Trinity with whom she was currently connected, was enthusiastic about going into battle again. But she suspected that was his warrior hormones talking. After all, she'd already taken a greater risk than she disclosed to Straker. The only way she was able to ensure the destruction of the final fortress was to use a portion of the stolen antimatter by installing it in a float mine. She simply hadn't had a warhead big enough to crack the asteroid. The resulting titanic explosion had damaged her systems severely, though she'd managed to hide the full import from Straker so far. Now, she was actively hiding the technical details of the assault on the Capitol. If Straker had Zaxby's or Murdoch's kind of mind, he'd have immediately wondered about emergence in atmosphere. It was a hazardous technique, fraught with the danger of molecular interactions. The antimatter provided a way to mitigate this problem, plus the problem of the local defenses. When her congruence point was in position, she released a tiny portion of antimatter, the equivalent of a large conventional bomb, back into normal space. Then, with exquisite timing, she emerged from underspace, exactly inside the microsecond of vacuum created by the blast. Not only did the explosion minimize molecular interactions, it shocked the defenses, functioning like a flashbang grenade would in a security operation. Instead of a ship, automated anti-aerospace weapons emplacements first detected a blast. This gave Indy just enough time to use her own beams to silence every emplacement within line of sight. She emerged directly above the House of Parliament, in the center of the Capitol complex, seat of the Hundred Worlds government. No doubt the politicians there never really expected enemy troops to get this far. Her impellers strained as she sat down directly atop the complex. A surreal act of vandalism, the landing half crushed the buildings beneath. Immediately she opened her flight deck doors and the breakers bounded out. One part of her mind assisted Straker as he, in his mech suit, led his troops toward the Hundred Worlds war room in the bunker beneath the buildings. There they hoped to find the Prime Minister, his cabinet, and staff. Like rats, they were hiding underground, hoping they were safe. Trinity hacked various systems continuously, provided overwatch fire, and gave warning of everything she saw. Straker had a chance, she thought,
but the probability was low that he would be able to fight his way all the way into the heavily defended bunker. There were enemy mech suiters and battle suiters all over the area, even now converging on Straker's position. She interdicted or destroyed all she could, but for most, she couldn't get clean shots as they used cover in the tunnels beneath the complex. At the same time, the battle in space above was still very much in doubt. Her underspace generators couldn't sustain another insertion. If Engels and Victory had to withdraw, then she, Zaxby, and the Breakers would be captured or killed. Straker and the others she'd come to know and call friends, Loco, Heiser, Red Wolf, and the rest, would know she'd failed them, and failed Straker's dream of liberation. And Straker had said that bluffing was the way he intended to win. No doubt he meant he'd threatened to destroy the Capitol complex and the politicians there. Probably the majority of members of Parliament had been evacuated, but it was the Prime Minister who'd be making the decision. But a company of Breakers couldn't cause destruction massive enough, frightening enough, to ensure the bluff worked, and the Prime Minister was reputed to be no coward. Even if Straker breached the bunker and seized the head of government, the man might not believe Straker was willing to overload his own suit and take everyone down with him. No, there was only one way to sell this bluff. Indy activated her wideband comlink and transmitted in the clear.
Hundred Worlds Command, this is the semi-artificial intelligence of the destroyer Griffin, currently grounded atop your capital complex. I have a message for you. Please respond.
She repeated that message, impersonating a ship's computer rather than a true AI, until she got a reply.
This is General Hines, Jackson. What's your message, Griffin?
Indy switched to a perfect imitation of Straker's voice.
This is Derek Straker, known as the Liberator. By now you've detected my use of antimatter to destroy the fortresses above and the smaller blast that accompanied Griffin's arrival. I've set this ship's SAI to detonate the remaining antimatter if you do not surrender your forces. The warhead has a yield of over 200 gigatons and will annihilate everything within 500 kilometers. You have 10 minutes to transmit your capitulation to all forces.
That's insane, Straker. This is our capital city. There are almost 1 billion people in that radius. Indy repeated the message word for word. By the time it ended, the Prime Minister came on the comlink with similar pleas. Indy repeated the message a third time and then a fourth, only changing the word 10 to 9, and then 8 minutes to comply. By minute 5, the Hundred Worlds head of government must have finally understood that he was dealing with an unalterable, uncaring computer, programmed to kill everyone if necessary. Straker led the Breakers deep into the underground beneath Parliament. Time after time, he cut, tore, and widened the passageways to force his mech suit through, and nothing could stand against him. The long-dead designers of the bunkers had never imagined defending against such a combat machine. Autocannon fire chewed at him. Computer-directed lasers burned him. Anti-tank missiles gouged chunks out of him, but he won through, though he lost a quarter of his Breakers. When the final door yielded to Straker's force cannon and he regretfully cut down the last brave Hundred Worlds soldier, the Breakers spread out and took possession of the war room. As they did, he set his mech suit's power plant to overload in 15 minutes, and then activated the audio-vid display that amplified his voice and showed his face on his meter-wide faceplate. It was as if a 50-ton metal god stood above the cringing cabinet, the Prime Minister, and the military chiefs of staff, and it pointed its weapons directly at them.
"Prime Minister," his amplified voice bellowed. "I'm Derek Straker. They call me the Liberator. I know about the Opters, and I know about what you scumbags do to the minds of your citizenry. I know because you did it to me. That ends now. Admiral Needern is dead. Your home fleet is on the verge of defeat, and my people are even now taking control of your virtual matrix networks." He was bluffing, of course.
He didn't know Nedern was dead. He didn't know if Engels was winning. And he certainly didn't have control of their networks. But the Prime Minister had no way of knowing these things. His next words escalated the bluff. "People are still dying, and the Opters are readying to attack us all with hundreds of Nest ships and millions of drones. I've set my suit to overload, and you can't stop it. Surrender the 100 worlds now, or your government and everyone in this complex will die." The Prime Minister stared helplessly up at Straker and pointed at a large screen off to his left. Others on his staff pointed too, and they silently moved their mouths. Straker realized he hadn't opened his audio receivers. When he did, they babbled something about already surrendering.
"Derek Straker,"
Zaxby comlinked as he ambulated into the field of view.
"It appears we've already won. Your message threatening to annihilate everything within 500 kilometers with antimatter did the trick."
"What? What message?" Zaxby pointed with two tentacles at the same screen as the prisoners. Straker zoomed in on it and read the text of the message aloud. "The warhead has a yield of over 200 megatons and will annihilate everything within 500 kilometers. You have 4 minutes to transmit your capitulation to all forces. What the hell is this?"
"It appears your bluff was successful."
"That wasn't my bluff,"
Zaxby gestured. "They all think it is. Perhaps it would be unwise to disagree."
Loco broke in.
"Boss, just shut up and accept their surrender. As you said, our people are fighting and dying up there. And shut down your overload."
"Right. Right." Straker returned his power plant to normal.
"Prime Minister, I accept your capitulation. Transmit a stand-down order immediately. Zaxby, Loco, make sure he does it, and no tricks. Trinity, you on this channel?"
"We're here."
"Did you?"
"Yes, Liberator. I can play poker, too. I bluffed."
"You bluffed?" Straker laughed, feeling giddy with relief. "You bluffed?"
"It seemed appropriate. I apologize if I overstepped my authority in replicating your voice and image."
Straker let out a long breath. He cracked open his mech suit and dismounted to take possession of the government of the 100 worlds.
"Trinity?"
"Yes, Liberator."
"I think I'll give you a pass this time."
Chapter 41. Atlantis. 3 days later. Straker, dressed in his formal uniform, strode up the steps of the hastily repaired Grand Hall of Parliament, the ceremonial heart of the 100 worlds. Inside, heads of state had been invested for over 300 years, ever since the capital had been moved from Old Earth with the splitting of the Terran Commonwealth. That's what the secret history files said, anyway. Today, in a sense, the opposite of an investment would take place. The 100 worlds as a sovereign entity would be no more. In 2 hours, the Prime Minister and other key leaders from the executive and judiciary would sign the formal documents of capitulation. As Straker's eyes roved over the stately, white-columned front of the hall, he marveled at the events of the last 2 years and his role in them. Never in his life had he expected to end up as the most powerful man in human space. And frankly, he didn't really want that power. Not for himself, anyway. But he knew he'd need it soon, to deal with the Opters.
"Surreal, huh, boss?"
Loco said from his elbow.
"Who'd have thought we'd ever stand here like this?"
"Not me." An arm slipped into his hand, and Straker turned his head to see Mara, in a stunning black dress. She stood on tiptoe to kiss his cheek, and then put on a mock frown.
"Don't think I'm not still mad at you. Didn't Dad teach you to never hit a woman?"
I know, I'm sorry. You'll get over it.
Are the undamaged people are out of Vic now, and in regeneration tanks. The zombie brains, well, they'll stay with him for now. Wiser minds than mine will have to sort out that ethical dilemma."
Straker nodded, and then turned as a delegation of a dozen hundred world's officials approached him. Red Wolf stepped from behind Straker to bar their way.
"It's all right, Red," Straker said. "They're our guys now."
"Bullshit," Red Wolf muttered, but stepped aside.
"Liberator Straker,"